Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 302 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. So we are back to our giveaways. We're giving away another book today. We're going to be giving away the Concise Foraging Guide, published by Bloomsbury in association with the Wildlife Trust. Now, because this is a UK and European based guide, I've tried to pick from our European and UK based Patreon subscribers, but that's not usually the case. So do bear that in mind if you live outside the UK and Europe. And once you've won something, I'm not including you in future draws until until we've been through everyone. Then we might go again. But so if you are currently a patron and you haven't yet won from our Patreon subscriber draw on Fridays, then just be aware that your odds are going up every single week. So this week, as I say, we're giving away that foraging guide. It's a pocket guide. It's one you can carry with you quite comfortably when you're out in the field. So we'll be doing the draw on that at the end of this episode. And if you would like to be included in that draw, all you need to do is become a Patreon subscriber of the show at patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. Now, I've got very little housekeeping today, but I did want to mention a few things. That was the first one before we get into today's episode, which is all about permaculture zones. Another bit of housekeeping was just to say, again, I'm getting caught up on my emails and what have you. There's a couple of people I'm yet to reply to, but I'm mostly there. I do have a bit of listener feedback that I want to share, but we'll do that on another episode because we've got quite a lot to get through today, I think. But if you've sent me an email and I haven't responded, or you haven't heard it read out on the show, then rest assured, I'm coming. I am getting to you, I promise. And also, if you have sent me your address and I haven't replied, then chances are I've missed it somehow, with one exception. Sean Frau, I've got yours. I haven't got round to sending your prize yet or replying, but I'll be doing that this week, Sean. So thank you for supporting the show, all of you guys. Right, let's get into today's topic, and we're talking about permaculture zones. Now, this is something that has really come into my head a lot more lately, because with our house move coming up, we are going to be for the first time in a position where we can actually implement proper zoning in our property. Because as you guys will most likely know, if you've been listening to me for a little while, where we live at the moment is a rented property, and there's quite a lot of space surrounding the house, which are all sort of formal lawns and gardens, which we cannot do anything with. Everything we do has to be outside that space in what we call the paddock or the more wild areas beyond. So we're moving back into a property that we own. It's a much, much smaller property than the one we're on now, but it means we are, for the first time, in a position where we can properly design everything around raising food, and we can design everything exactly how we want. We're the only people to be accountable to, and it's really, really exciting, and it's giving me the opportunity to implement permaculture zones for the first ever time. So I've been thinking about it a great deal, and I think it's going to be a great process, and I'll be sharing my journey on YouTube, as most of our regular listeners will know. And it's going to be a great opportunity for me to show people how permaculture zones can be used even in a smaller space. You know, you don't need acres to use permaculture zones, although, of course, you can use permaculture zones in acres. This is the beauty of this system. You can use it whatever your size of garden. So when you are starting to design a garden, or perhaps redesign or make changes to a garden, it can be a little bit overwhelming and be difficult to know where to start. You might, like I tend to do, start too many things at once, or the opposite, just get bogged down in the details and actually do nothing, have a decision paralysis where there's too many things to do and you can't decide where to start. And a way to get through this process is to break the property down into manageable sections or zones. And you can do that using the permaculture system and by zoning your property that way. So what are permaculture zones? I hear you cry. Well, it really is quite simple. It's a central part of the whole permaculture design process, and it's really about separating the areas into the most frequent version of it I've seen is using five different zones based on, and they're based on how often you'll need to be there, basically, is the easiest way of dividing them. So you're talking about your crops, but also your animals, your structures, and things like that. They're all going to be placed into zones depending on their maintenance requirements, their, you know, how often you need to be there. So we're going to be incorporating permaculture zones. We're also going to be using the idea of permaculture zones if and when we get additional land, additional space, whether that's a field or an allotment, we'll be using the permaculture zone principle. So if you are familiar with the idea of growing some vegetables in your garden, but also growing some in an allotment, one of the simplest decisions that you're going to make, but one of the most critical decisions you're going to make, is what you're going to grow at home, what you're going to grow at the allotment. Now, obviously, home is much closer than your allotment. Even if your allotment is only a few hundred meters away, it's still much, much closer to step out your back door into your garden. So generally, we would make the decision to grow things that need lots of attention in the garden in our home, and the things that need less attention in our allotment. What does that mean? Well, we would be growing, for instance, things like herbs that we might be picking several times a week, things like green beans and runner beans that when they are in fruit, we're going to be harvesting pretty much every day. We might choose to grow all of those things in our garden, along with salad plants and anything like that. Whereas we might choose to grow things like potatoes and squash, which probably require two or three visits of maintenance throughout their whole growing season, and then one visit to harvest, we'd grow them off-site in our allotment. Well, that all makes perfect sense to people. But when you think about doing it in your own home, sometimes people throw those principles out and forget about distance to the front door when they're planning where they're going to grow all of their vegetables. So as a result, we get to think about all of these things when we're planning our space, even if it is just a single garden, our back garden. So zone one, we would say, we right outside our door, and zone five would be the furthest parts of our garden, the more wild areas, the areas where you don't manage production nearly as much. And the exact boundaries between the zones, they are a bit fluid. They're not set in stone. You know, we don't put a wall up between each boundary. But the basic idea is that zone one is the area you visit daily. And each time you go up an area, up a zone, you're visiting that area less and less. So we think about elements such as crops in zone one would need regular maintenance, while crops in zone five might not need any maintenance at all, just a bit of harvesting. Or maybe think apple trees, where you're just going to pick the apples, and maybe, depending on your system, depending on how much space you have and the type of growing you're doing, maybe once a year pruning, maybe not even that. It kind of depends, and you need to find the right balance for you. But if you take the time to design the property and design the space really well, you'll save yourself time and frustration in the long run, and it's more likely to turn into something that really is productive and that you enjoy being in, that, you know, enjoy using the space. So if you've got a larger property, you would have a big zone one and a big zone two and a big zone three. And if you've got a smaller property, obviously these things are smaller. The other thing to mention about the difference between a larger and a smaller property is there's going to be things you don't have on a smaller property, like goats, for example. So perhaps you skip zone three or whatever it might be yourself, you know, and it's about deciding what's right for you. But zone one, let's start there. So zone one is the area right outside your front door and your back door that you visit every single day. It might even be inclusive of the area that you walk through when you get to your car to go to work or go and pick up your newspaper or your post. These are all parts of zone one. It could also be the area where you take your dog for a walk every single day. You know, somewhere you're going to be every single day is considered zone one. And the key to identifying these areas is just areas that you're going to be every single day with little effort. And, you know, for instance, you might include parts of your dog walk as zone one, but not really for harvesting vegetables. That's not something you're going to do when you're out walking your dog. You're not going to have, you know, all the necessary bags and things to carry your produce home necessarily. So just things to bear in mind. So in zone one, you're going to want, you know, all of the things that require every single day attention. So in our zone one, we're going to be planting lots and lots of our really time intensive crops like the ones I've mentioned before. Certainly we're going to have a small herb garden in our zone one, and again, like I say, we're going to be having beans and things of that nature that really do require, when they need picking sort of every single day. Beans might make it into zone two because that picking process doesn't last all that long, and it's about balancing out the need and the requirements for your time over the year and working out what works for you. And one way of doing this might be to make a list of all the things that you've got to use, all the things that you've got to introduce to your homestead. So what we're going with out the back is going to be in our back garden, just basically crops growing. And in our front garden, that's going to, it's not really a front garden, it's a small driveway that we're going to fence off, and we're going to use that for our hens. So both of these would include, you know, be included in zone one. Now in zone two are things that you're still likely to visit on a daily basis, but it's a little bit further out than zone one. It might be an area that you're going to decidedly to deal with the items in that area. So again, this is a great area for things like chickens, maybe some of your less intensive insofar as time requirement plants. So lots of our vegetables are going to be in zone two. I'm thinking of things like, goodness me, I don't know, carrots and beetroot and things that require much less attention than the things in zone one, but more attention than things like Brussels sprouts, which are going to, in our garden, make it into zone three. So zone three, because our garden is in, you know, not having, because it's such a small space that we're moving to, it's not having a lot of the things that would traditionally be thought of as zone three. We're going to be using it as an extension of our vegetable garden. And these are going to be things like our potatoes and Brussels sprouts and things that don't need very much attention, at least until we get that off-site space. Also in zones three, you might consider things like your compost bin, things of that nature, things that you're going to be going to fairly regularly. Now, if you've got animals, they would probably, larger animals, would probably fit into zones one or two, or sorry, I take that back, that was a mistake, two or three, you know, just outside the things that you're going to several times a day, but in the next frequented area. That's where your animals would generally go, depending on the animals. I would suggest something like zone three or four. And then as we move out into zones four and beyond, four, I would say you might have, if you've got a large area, this would be a perfect place to have a hazel grove coppice, somewhere you're going to coppice meat. Some of your larger animals like cattle or sheep, things that perhaps only need checking on once or twice a week. Perhaps you've got beehives there in zone four. And even if you've got a huge space, maybe some staple crops like wheat and corn in a more commercial style where you're growing vast quantities of these things. And then as we move further and further out, zones five and beyond, we're talking about wild planting of mushrooms, perhaps some, but if you're lucky enough to have a fishing pond that you might have, some native plants that you use for foraging, some larger wood harvesting if you're growing an actual woodland that you're using. And then finally, as you go out to the very edge, zones five and six and beyond would generally be left to nature, and you leave some wild areas. And a big part of the reason for this is what we're trying to create. Remember when I said at the start of the episode that the boundary between each zone is not a hard line, you know, they're fluid and they will move. the reason that we want to leave wild spaces is because it makes an important buffer, and it allows a zone where the wild can then come into our garden, encouraging things like hedgehogs to come in and eat your slugs and snails, encouraging amphibians in, etc., etc. Now, another thing to think about, that's sort of like how you think about what the zones are and what they're for in a very broad way. But another thing to think about are permanent structures, things that aren't going to move. Perhaps you already have a big masonry outbuilding that you use to store all of your tools and equipment, things that aren't going to move. Well, these are things that are going to dictate to some degree your layout as well. So you consider this at the same time. You put this into the pot. And when you are drawing out your ideas for how you're going to lay your garden out, another thing that's really important is to, once you've got an idea for what your garden's going to look at, take some different coloured pens and just with your pen, walk through the garden as if it was Monday and go to all the areas that you're going to be doing, all the harvesting, and imagine you're actually doing it. So once you've harvested some things, walk back to the house, bring them in, and then go out again and do whatever else is you're doing. Walk out and feed your chickens and do all this in an orange pen. And then pick up a blue pen and do Tuesday. Pick up a red pen and do Wednesday, and so on and so on. And do a full week and see what a full week looks like. And then look at your map and think, right, which of these areas of walkways are working, which aren't? Do I have space here that I've given over to pathways that are maybe used once a week and I could use that space better? Are there pathways that are getting a ridiculous amount of traffic that I need to maybe think about making the access a little bit better on? Or perhaps you've got one particular pathway that you're using almost constantly and it's currently lawn. Do you need to think about putting down something that's going to be a little bit more hard wearing there than the grass that you currently have growing? These are all really important steps. And it's taking the steps like this that are really going to make your design stick. It's going to make it work in the long run rather than in the short run. You know, think of the winter. When is wind and rain? Is the ground going to put up with the amount of traffic that you're giving it? Do you need to install some stepping stones or something like that? These are all things that are worth considering at the design stage, I think. And of course, throughout this process, we need to be considerate of all the other design principles, of which I've done a large series on, the Permaculture Design Principles series. Please do go back and listen to that if you haven't already. We need to be considering things like sunlight and rainfall and water capture and all these things throughout all the elements of our design process. But that is how we integrate the zones into what we're doing. And like I say, if you want to see me work through this whole process at our new property, I will be doing so in a little over a month now. I think we're about 6 weeks away from our house move. So yeah, we'll be sharing all of that with you here on the podcast and of course on the YouTube channel if you want to see it much more visually and actually be there with me. That's a great way of joining me on this journey. Right, so that is permaculture zones and how you use them. Please do get in touch, give me your feedback, let me know if you're using permaculture zones. If you've got ideas for a future show, a request for a future show, I am all ears. Also, if you think you would be a good guest, if you'd like to come on and have a conversation with me about what you're doing, perhaps you're doing something innovative or different at your homestead, or perhaps you'd just like to share your homestead journey, please do get in touch and we can have a conversation. It's selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com. And I appreciate all of you guys for keeping in touch with me. It is a real blessing. Having found this community has really helped me through a difficult few weeks. And yeah, I appreciate all of you guys. Many of you have gotten in touch and for various different reasons, and I appreciate each and every one of you. Right, let's get on to today's Patreon subscriber draw to win the Concise Foraging Guide published by Bloomsbury in association with the Wildlife Trust. And I'm going to reach into my little hat of names now, and the winner is Hannah Rayner. So, Hannah, thank you so much for being a patron of the show. Please do send me your address to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, and I will get this book in the post to you. Thank you ever so much for listening, guys. We will be back next week. We'll be back to our regular schedule with our Wednesday interviews next week. I've got a couple of great interviews in the can already, which will be coming out over the next few weeks. We're going to be talking about something called the Eden Method of Gardening with a chap called Creedmoor Fury next week. And after that, we're going to be talking about permaculture ponds in another interview, and off we go into the future. So thank you ever so much for listening, guys. I'll be in touch and I'll speak to you next week. Cheers. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.